Brooklyn sounds like.
Hey, it's time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. And I'm Dr. Lisa. You know who I am, right? I'm the self-proclaimed psychotherapist that asks too many questions. I just use it as an excuse to bug people. Anyway, thanks so much for listening and tuning in to Radio Free Brooklyn, the greatest station in the world, okay? In the entire universe, including the ones that are out there near Mars. So, do you know that Radio Free Brooklyn is a free and open platform? And because it's free, we really need donations. This is, you know, free speech right now, folks, is very, very important. And we are a very positive influence on society. We need to be heard. And instead of giving your money away to, like, you buy too much crap, okay? I know you do. Just go to radiofreebrooklyn.org and give us some money. And you know what? It's a tax donation, and you've got to spend some money before the end of the year. I know you do. You do. Okay. So I am very, very, very excited about my guest today. There she is. There she is looking at me. Beth Campbell. So I want to tell you about her. She is one of my favorite artists ever. And I, you see somebody's work. I mean, for me, it's art or comedy, stuff like that. But, like, you know, maybe you're a musician and you see somebody, you hear somebody and you're like, wow, that thing is great. So never heard anything like that. And then you actually get to know the person a little bit. So that's what happened with Beth. I mean, when I first saw her work, it was at the Greater New York Show. I think that was 2000. Yeah. And she's still working on these, like, really interesting drawings called My Potential Future Based on Present Circumstances. And they were text drawings, and they start out with something small, and then they kind of, like, turn into this web of what could possibly happen, and then they wind up in, like, all sorts of weird different endings. I'm going to explain this one to you because I have it here written. Campbell's investigations are personal, revealing, and often laugh out loud funny. I mean, that's the thing. Beth has a great sense of humor, guys. A line that begins with dating Peter makes its way to assorted conclusions, including move into the hills and become a nun. Become a nun. Which she didn't. So that was from, what year was that from, Beth?
The very first, my slang is Potential Future, just instead of saying the whole title. But the very first one was in the fall of 99.
Right. So
late summer.
Late summer. So you definitely didn't turn into a nun.
No.
But you did wind up marrying Peter, right?
Yes.
Which is pretty interesting. So anyway, I want Beth to explain the work because it's way too much for me. But I just want to tell you a little bit more about it in her background. So anyway, you know how I like to read credits, folks, right? The Museum of Modern Art. Like, this is where her work is, okay? Collections, Museum of Modern Art, NYU, New Museum. The Whitney, she's had solo shows in all those. She's had solo shows at, like, the Whitney. She got a Guggenheim Fellowship. Skowhegan, that's a big deal. She had a residency at Kohler where, you know, that, like, major fancy company that makes sinks. She had an artist residency there. But so Beth's work is conceptual. Am I all over the place on this? I haven't done this in 2 weeks. I was on a trip to Kyiv. I went to Ukraine. That's right. Yeah. We can't forget about Ukraine. Okay. So, I got to focus here. The thing about Beth's work is that it's conceptual art, and it is so, the range of her ability to conceptualize and her ability to actually craft and make things is so broad. Like the level of thinking, and also the level of thinking, the level of personal inquiry, the level of universal truths, I'm going to say. And then on top of that, the ability to make a simple drawing, text drawing, and also the ability to craft a big architectural kind of set is just, I don't know anyone. There are people that run artist factories that hire all sorts of people to do that, but they are not capable on their own, as our friend Beth is. I'm going to say that. And here's a question that a curator asked Beth that I'm going to say helps sum up her skills to some degree. So this is from, from the Whitney, the curator at the Whitney. I don't have the name in here. It seems to me that the work that you do, you would need to have a good sense of industrial design, architectural planning, design, and math. Is that something that came naturally to you or something you had to develop because that was the kind of work that you wanted to make? And here's another question from another curator, Sarah Marquette. Your work seems to consistently deal with issues surrounding perception, both visual and conceptual, verging on the psychological. So do you see what I'm saying? It's confounding to try to explain to you people what her work is. So I'm going to, Beth, take it, help us out here. Help us out. Can you elaborate on what I said? Did that make sense to you? Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely makes sense to me, but I feel like as I've gotten older, I've found that it is harder to explain what I do because it keeps branching out in different directions. But let's say in terms of the one core thought is I feel like the work is trying to undermine or pull the rug out from this kind of consistent and sense of a solid self, maybe. And it's I don't know, I'm really interested in making, because I think it is very weird. I'm going to say something super simple, but it's very weird to be a human, to be alive. And I mean, it's just otherworldly and all that. So it should make work that kind of brings that out a little more.
So you find the actual phenomenon of being a human being and that being alive is weird. It's a freak show because it's such a weird accident. Is that kind of?
Yeah.
Where does that thinking come from?
I don't know. I mean, being a human, I guess, but I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I haven't had this kind of conversation in a while, but I think some people have been surprised that I haven't done as many drugs or whatever. It's that's a way, an avenue into seeing things in a very weird way. But it's whether it's just how I grew up or.
You have certain amount of awareness. You have a heightened, kind of naturally, it seems like you have a heightened sense of awareness.
I've enjoyed that.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, because it is, if you stop and think about it, it is a freak show that we can't find life on any other planet, and how we've all, what's going on is really weird, but we don't think about that most often. But it seems really kind of front of mind to you. Is that right?
Yeah.
So how did you get that way? Have you always been that way? Did you have an incident?
I think probably part of it is that I'm from a small town where there wasn't much to do.
Uh-huh.
And so I had a childhood of wandering around. It's all the lingo they have now about being bored helps for creativity and all that. And I spent a lot of time wandering around, you know, and like imagining, like, say if we were driving somewhere on the highway and looking at the other houses and imagining what those lives were like and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm from a very small town. There's smaller ones, but it was like 4,200 people.
4,200 people?
Yeah. And it was a very flat environment. It's like very flat Illinois.
So you're from the Midwest, obviously, Illinois.
Yes.
And was it like a farming town? Or?
Yes. Yes.
So did you grow up on a farm then?
I did not. My dad worked for the railroad, but I had friends that were farmers, and they had the best slumber parties.
Oh, I bet. So let's say, how far away were your neighbors?
Well, because I was in town, so it was just like,
oh,
you know, little footprints of yards, you know. But in the town, if you stood in the middle of the town, you could see the edges of the town.
How many kids in your high school class?
In my class, I think, I forget exactly, but it's like somewhere from like 60 to 80, somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm. And you knew everybody you grew up with?
Yeah.
And if somebody like dyed their hair a new color, the whole town would know?
Yeah, that wasn't happening at the time. It was more the perm.
the perm or whatever.
Yeah.
Or like, was there gossip?
Oh, yeah.
So people like knew what that.
It was heavy.
Like what?
I'm not going
to. Oh, come on.
You want me to gossip again?
yeah. We're no name. We don't know these people. We're talking like, come on, it's a long time ago. But like, would it be affairs or?
Yeah, like.
Out of wedlock, pregnancies, what kind of stuff?
I think it's like, without going down this road too much, unfortunately, it's like, you know, teenagers would do things, but the girl would get. Gossip about, you know what
okay.
I mean? That kind
oh,
of thing.
Hoes. We had hoes. Sluts. Yeah. Okay. So, did you grow up with brothers and sisters?
Yes. I'm the youngest of seven.
Holy fucking shit. That doesn't sound boring at all.
Right. Well, I'm 7 years younger than the next oldest also. So, I kind of had a very different, kind of on your own existence.
Were they all close in age?
Yes, that crew of six. Yes.
And then you were the youngest. So what was that experience like? Like, were you ignored? Did you?
My mom had started working before I was born because she didn't work when all six of them were together.
Mm-hmm.
And so then when I was born, she went back to work. So everybody had to take care of me. So I was like bossed around.
And how did that feel? What was that like? Did you feel like this is fun, this is special, or did you feel like, oh, you know, like they're all doing their thing? And what was it like?
Well, I guess this is a psychoanalysis show. It felt kind of like you're like you weren't welcome. Exactly.
You weren't welcome.
Yeah.
Wow, that's interesting. Like, you were a pain in the ass that they had to take care.
Yeah, because you're the little kid and they're teenagers, and it's like, why do I have to?
Ooh. You know. So you were aware of that?
I think it's that thing where at the time you're just there, and then when you're older, you're like, oh, yeah, that's what that feeling is.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow. So, that's interesting. So, did you have a lot of friends growing up?
I think so. I mean, it's a small town again, so you would get, like, initially it was, like, the neighborhood kids. And that was kind of its own fun freedom of, like, running around the block and all that. And
right. That sounds healthy.
Yeah. And that, I definitely had, you know, commuted around on my bike a bunch, and there was that kind of, like, get home before dark.
Uh-huh.
But of course, as a child too, I was like kind of provocative because, like, if I was late, I was like, well, how was I supposed to know when it's going to get dark? Like, how am I going to be home before it's dark if I don't know when it's dark? If it's
so you were a little bit of a pain in the butt?
Yeah, I guess so.
Did you stand out in your family? Like, were you more, you know, did you make yourself known, or were you more with all those kids? I can't imagine.
Right. Well, it's interesting. I mean, at the time, of course, I wasn't too terribly aware. You know, when you're younger, you're just kind of in it.
Yeah.
Though my next older sibling, he was a photojournalist for a while, and I really looked up to him. And he was responsible for me, for my mom buying me a Pentax camera in high school.
Oh,
so
wow.
That was kind of a good influence. But I, about 5 years ago, when my mom was about to pass away, her sister and my aunt, we were in the hospital, and she ended up saying to me, like, "You were always different." And I felt like that was the nicest thing my family had ever said to me.
Really? Why know? Was that a nice thing to
hear? Well, I mean, it was kind of
validating.
Recognition, which...
So you feel like you were a little... What do you think she meant, though?
I mean, of course, I'm going to read into it.
Yeah,
my
right,
feelings.
Right. This is why you're here. This
but
is
just
why
like a different pace, like a different desire, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Were they creative?
Well, my parents kept busy with crafty things. My dad did a lot of paint by numbers, which is very interesting because like he was kind of a weathered, grumpy guy, I guess you could say, but he sat and did paint by numbers all the time. And again, now we're looking like with now the conversations of flow and all that, I was like, oh, it was like self-meditating, you know, in a way.
Right. Yeah.
So that was like
occupational therapy.
Yeah.
Right.
Totally. And then my mom was very crafty. She did a lot of crocheting. And
but like you kind of came to the your interest in art on your own, I think, then, right?
Yes.
It wasn't like something that somebody brought to you.
No. Like I to go back to, not sure if this counts, but like did 4-H early on, like mm-hmm. fourth grade or something like that. And that was like in that crafty tradition, you know. But I did have an incredibly good art teacher in high school mm-hmm. for such a small town. And that's where things really got in motion, where by my senior year, I was doing like AP and half of the day I was just doing my own work and, you know, just generating it.
So you had sort of somebody that you had a chance to have it cultivated.
Yeah.
And what did you initially, what were you initially drawn to? Like, was it painting or drawing or what was it?
It's funny. I was probably similar where I did all kinds of.
All different mediums.
I mean, that's what was wonderful about this teacher that we, like in high school, we were throwing on the wheel. We had a raku ceremony. We were doing relief prints, etching,
wow.
silk screens, like, I can't think of, I can't think of this artist's name. This is terrible.
No, it's because you're on the air and you have pressure.
Yeah. But I did a pastiche of this particular artist that, he ended up making these really elaborate frames that had all kinds of imagery uh-huh. depicted in it. So I uh-huh. did that. In plaster, like
wow.
glass plaster.
Wow. You know. Did you stand out in art class?
Well, a little. I have to say that my senior year, there were four young women that we were quite competitive in a way.
Yeah.
And one of which is a friend I visit all the time who's now, she's been the grade school art teacher in my hometown, which I commend. I think it's amazing.
Totally.
You know, like we were, you know, friends, but competitive uh-huh. friends. And uh-huh. we've continued a career in art.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. That's very awesome. So you seem like a real perfectionist to me. is that true?
I think, yeah.
Like kind of a little bit, like extremely so, maybe?
Interesting.
I'm not sure, but you tell me.
Yeah, that makes
like
sense.
Like a perfectionist.
I don't live that way.
Like you don't, but well, it's funny.
In the work.
In the work for sure. But like, like guys, like if you, if you casually met Beth, right, you wouldn't look at her and go like, oh my God, what an uptight perfectionist. But if you see the work and also even the way that you prepared for this, you listen, do you know that Beth actually listened to other shows? Several other shows. I don't take that for granted. So do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So where is that, perfectionist? And it seems like you have perfectionism in a way that you can't even grasp that you're perfectionist because you don't ever, and this is a guess, you tell me, but you don't ever think that you're perfect, and though whatever that you're trying to make perfect is perfect enough.
Right.
Is that true on it? Like, where is this perfectionist? Right. I mean, you use it well.
Yeah. I mean, what stands out in my mind as you're talking about that is the first example of this was a piece that I'm not even sure if you saw, but I did it in graduate school, and it was a piece that's called Everything I Own. Mm-hmm. And I'll describe the piece and then I'll describe what's good about it. But I literally took everything I own that was in the town minus my vehicle and made a canyon out of it in my studio in graduate school. But I had an outfit on too, so it wasn't a naked piece, I would say.
Okay.
It wasn't a nude performance piece. But I had a friend help me, who was one of my roommates, was helping me move my dressers and stuff into the studio. Uh-huh. And he had pointed out, like, why do you have to take it this far? Why can't you just lie? And it was interesting. He was just frustrated that he was not helping me move when there was no, you know, it was for the...
Yeah, right. Just for art.
I don't know. There was something about setting up that parameters or the parameter. Then in it, you can be free.
Right. You know? Structure. So it's like,
yeah, there's like an equation, and then within it, you can be free. So then say when it was an early piece with Roebling Hall where there were two identical rooms.
Yes, which I remember that. Yes, but I have followed, I've seen all the work pretty much. I followed their career. I saw, you know, when you had, I forget which piece, it was like it was like the dining room table, the tables that, I remember like going there and seeing it and like there was Roberta Smith hanging out.
Nice.
But anyway, go ahead. So, so there was, so you mean the other person, your friend couldn't understand your level of like dedication to moving everything in there or?
Well, then I guess that's where the work is for me too. Cause then it's not, you know, it's like, it's you follow through with it.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And that's where it's, I guess it's a job for me or it's like, I just, you know, it's, I set up a parameter, I fulfilled it.
There's a certain amount of discipline.
And for me, it was kind of fun, actually. I know there was something really liberating and silly about it, too, that was enjoyable to take everything and move it into your studio.
It is pretty silly.
Yeah.
So I guess what I'm wondering about is the self, is the perfectionism coming from a sense of like self-criticism? Hmm. Or is it more like putting a structure around so you, is there a sense where you really want to be free and relaxed so you're making something that's strict so you could, I don't know, maybe none of that makes any sense.
I mean, like I was saying, like, do you feel like setting up the structure, then you're free in it.
And it's so it's like more
you know what you need to do.
Right.
Because, like, I feel like in between projects when I don't know what I need to do, that's where it's, like, hard.
Right, you know, right.
When you know what you need to do.
Because your projects are always conceptual, so they can be different. The ideas are the same.
And how to come to that.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think I enjoy, I think I enjoy it.
Enjoy?
What you're calling perfectionism.
Yeah, like I guess I'm projecting.
Yeah.
I guess what I'm wondering is if it comes from, I think a lot of perfectionism comes from a feeling of not being good enough. Hmm. But which it probably does when I feel perfection. I'm projecting, folks. I have no training. but for you, you get a lot of satisfaction out of making things perfect, but in a weird way because so I'm just wondering like where that comes from, the like there's like a it sounds like there's a push pull from like perfectionist and freedom for you or something.
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
It seems like it.
Yeah, do you understand where that comes from?
I don't know.
Like, you think it's just innate?
I mean, I feel like I've talked some about my childhood. I was raised Catholic. I feel like there's something in that too, because you're like self-monitoring.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I find it so weird that you would have little kids do confession. Very strange.
Mm-hmm.
Get into that. But so I loved it.
You did?
Yeah. I mean, I stopped. I kind of walked away from the church in sixth grade or whatever. But like,
so
as a little kid, I really liked
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that, actually, because seven kids,
yeah,
that indicates there was no birth control.
Right.
And there was also, so the role of the Catholic Church in your life, what was that?
When I was young, I really enjoyed it. Like, when I say young, like elementary school, it just felt like maybe it's interesting, maybe it was some sort of kind of parameter or something, like something. I enjoyed the rituals of it. I think I spent spending a lot of time alone or being like shifted around,
so
that was something.
You went to church every week, is mm-hmm. that it?
And catechism,
whatever that is, every week.
Yeah.
And then your parents were really religious, I'm guessing.
Not really.
Can you explain that?
Yeah. Some things must remain secret, but
please. Yeah. Yes. No. So, but it sounds, yeah, that's, so go ahead. Yeah.
Well, I'll say one thing, that my father's relationship to the church was very strange, where we would go 25 minutes early and sit in the back. And then he would leave 5 minutes early to not, and then we'd leave early. So it was like church with no community. And I never understood it. I did end up learning why all this was happening.
Oh.
Which will remain a secret. But sure. As a young kid, you're like, this doesn't make any sense that we're not like performing this like other people are.
So he would avoid contact what do you call it? Parishioners?
Yeah.
Got the word right. So that was what you noticed, that it was weird that he was avoiding, and everybody else, like church is about community, a lot of it. And
yeah,
he avoided all of that.
Yeah.
Was that frustrating for you? Did you want to have some of that?
Again, as a kid, it's just what you're doing.
Right. You know? But do you think like,
but now looking back, it's like, that was really weird, you know?
And were your brothers and sisters involved in that? Were you all going as a team?
I mean, that's the thing, that when I was aware of my time of going to church, like a lot of them were older and doing other things.
Right.
So, I mean, there's a point where my next oldest brothers were there.
Right. So it'd be part of the family until they just made their own decisions, and then they didn't go. So what changed your mind about religion?
Oh, see, that's I mean, it's like this was a kid mental conversation, but it was, I look back and I feel good about that, you know, myself at that age, but I just didn't get the God is, was, and ever shall be.
God isn't, sorry.
And that was something that was said to me in catechism. It's really weird for me to talk about.
Really?
Funny it's there, but it was kind of my first philosophical question, I think, because there was the statement that God is, was, and ever shall be. And I was like, that just doesn't make any sense.
God is, was, and ever shall be, meaning that he's like kind of throughout time, from past to like infinity. And that blew your mind?
Yeah. I was like, nope, I'm over.
So you just didn't believe that?
No.
And that, so you felt like there was like a scientific reason not to believe in that it just, the religious part didn't make sense because of the science?
I think at the time, I don't think it was science as much as just like that was hard to comprehend,
mm-hmm.
you know? So it made me question. But that's looking back, like that moment of like, wait, this is really hard to comprehend, to actually really enter it. That's, I think, related to certain artworks and stuff. Not that my, I'm not saying at all that my work is about religion at all.
No,
but just
no,
that kind of like not taking something for granted and trying to enter it, like trying to feel it or think it.
You mean the way religion sets up, well, some people call them myths and some people think they're real. Is that what mm-hmm. you're talking about?
Yeah.
And so you were skeptical or you,
yeah,
you believed it and then you became skeptical.
Yeah.
And then
when I say I believed it, I was just a little kid.
Right. Of course. Like, but you believe cartoons are real.
I didn't.
I did. Well, whatever. Did. Maybe. So, so how did that affect you when you, like, was that like an aha moment kind of thing, or?
I suppose it's like, you know, maybe you could say it's the beginning of like your individual free thinking or something, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's where I think my high school art instructor came in also. Granted, this happened in sixth grade.
Mm-hmm.
But he really, it wasn't just about technique and all that. Like, we studied mythology and philosophy and mm-hmm. you know, a little bit in high school along mm-hmm. with the projects. Like when we did a Raku tea ceremony, like he tried to share what the thinking was with that. So
mm-hmm.
that was really a great start, you mm-hmm. know.
So do you think your religious training opened you up to like philosophy and thinking about science and
I'm
all
sure.
that?
Yeah. I mean, then when I was an undergrad, like when I transitioned from high school to college, like I had a brother that went to college for like 2 years, but dropped out. But I am the first in my family to get a 4-year degree, and I have a master's.
The first in your, you're the,
yeah.
meaning the only one.
I have my oldest sister has a nursing degree.
So wow.
And then the first,
so you were really from a real, you were really different than your family.
Yeah. But so when, going to like figuring out how to go to college, it wasn't like, I kind of like floundered through it and didn't know exactly what to do and ended up not at the best undergrad, but you know, you do what
yeah.
you can. And but what was amazing about it, because it was a liberal arts school, and one of my favorite classes was it was called Science and Intellectual History. So that was really awesome.
So there's some, you have some interest, innate interest in science.
Well, and the development of thought, you know, like.
In like societies, cultures developing their myths into like the whole cultural development, like how we start out in one, thinking one thing and wind up thinking like, oh, yeah.
Right.
It just rains because of the clouds and the moisture and all that.
Well, and even, like, I think I always enjoyed, too, to, like, really try to imagine what it felt like to, like, oh. not that I ever could, but, like, to be in those times where the thinking was different. Like, what did it...
Like, so if you, you know, believe in, you know, that, like, somebody puts fire on the earth, then like what else is true? Is it like right. that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really like to say the word truth, but
why is that?
I don't know. It's like I think I end up talking about experience, you know, more. But like in some of my installations, it's like what you think you're looking at isn't what it, you know. It's like, you think you're looking at something, but something else is happening.
Right.
And I like to
right.
play with that undermining of experience, you know.
Right. So, like, people think they're having, like, it's sort of like a mental Trump Loy sort of thing, mm-hmm. in a way. Like, you think it's you think you're looking at something, but
right.
you're not.
Right.
And yeah, which is really hard, by the way, really hard to do, guys, visually. It's hard to understand. It is a little hard to understand because it is hard to do. So I want you to go and look up Beth Campbell's work so you can understand what we're talking about, guys, okay? Do your own fucking research. How did you, like, you're from such an unlikely background to be, you know, so prolific and well-respected in the art world. It's true, isn't it?
I guess
in the sense that you're from a small town and you really developed your work very much. I mean, I know you had help, but you really, you were really motivated, not motivated, but curious or whatever. You know, you really made, you really wanted to, you were very self-motivated. You are very self-motivated. So what happened? Like, how did you transition to, like, coming to New York and all that? Like, that must have been, was that weird? Were people weird? Like, did you travel? Did you have a lot of experience outside your small town before you went to college?
Not really, except for, like, I did go to art camp, which was a big deal when I was in high school. It was at University of Illinois. And so a lot of the kids were from, like, Chicago. So that was a big shift.
Right.
I definitely, like, right after, you talked about, like, dyeing hair and stuff in the small town.
Right.
Everybody talked about it. But, like, after I went to this art camp, it was between my sophomore and junior year in high school. After that, I was goth and wore all black. And
started
piercing my ear. Open for, like, expanding myself, you know.
Right, right.
But I think... also, you know, being a youngest of seven and coming from a small town. And I worked at the truck stop in my hometown, which I think was kind of a really big deal. It was like, it's on Highway 55, and I worked there all through high school.
Does that mean you were like a waitress?
Oh, well, freshman year, I bussed tables, which was super gross.
Yeah.
And then I worked in the gas station sophomore through senior year. So that you had all kinds of people coming in.
Wow.
I don't know. I just like.
So you saw a lot of human nature and you seemed comfortable with people. Were you comfortable with people? I mean, did you get to talk to a lot of people?
Yeah. I mean, I was in high school, so I might not have been having very lengthy conversations,
right, but
I liked seeing a variety of people.
Yeah.
You know, really.
Yeah. And you didn't have to. It's funny because your father limited your socializing, and then all of a sudden you were like, "I can talk to all these people." That must have been really. And there is definitely a story in there, but
I guess I was talking about how I got to New York or whatever. Yeah, I guess we got way off that, if it's okay to go back to that. So undergrad, I ended up making really bad paintings at the end. Like, I was a painting major in undergrad, and I wasn't in my work at all. Like, and I almost didn't go into graduate school in art because there wasn't anything really around me. This was in Missouri that made me see what a career in art could be. It just looked like you could have paintings in a coffee shop.
Do you feel like you were limited, like your ideas about art or making art are very expansive? Do you feel like they were like more limited because you weren't being taught that in school, or you didn't see it around you?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And I had a great deal of nerves in undergrad too, which in grad school when I entered,
worried about the work or you or
all of it. I mean,
was being from a small town, did that like, I'm making a big deal about it, but was it a big deal? Like, not having, you know what I mean? Like, it just seems like your work, like art is such an expansive, big place to be. And when you don't have the experience, I'm just trying to figure out if there was some kind of like culture shock at some point.
Yeah. I mean, I think, being in a small town, everyone's looking at each other. You know, you're in endless. It's like, that Black Mirror TV show. It's like a Black Mirror because it's everyone's watching each. Long before.
You're being evaluated.
Long before social media and all that. Yeah.
You have no autonomy.
Yeah. You're like always under a gaze.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. So
was that inhibiting?
Like, I think it was for me.
Uh-huh.
Moving into undergrad.
Right.
You know.
Right. So when did you start feeling, you know, more autonomous?
Right. Or like, I'll tell you. It's kind of funny.
Sorry. Go ahead. I want to hear.
No, it's like, it's just a funny crazy story because, like, I almost didn't go into art. I considered going into geology randomly, and you know, just kind of figured out most of those jobs were actually office jobs. I had some fantasy of, like, you know, with the shovel out in the dirt and all that. So that wasn't going to happen. But so once I finally officially thought, okay, this is what I'm going to commit to, I ended up getting accepted into grad school, but I was still in Missouri. And I was like, I'm not going to spend this time, the next 6 months, waiting. And so I ended up going out to Boulder, Colorado, and, like, stayed with people I knew from undergrad and just kind of, like, went wild.
Like, really? Like, that's so
and
cool.
Just, like, kind of went to the edge and back. And
mean had fun.
You know, and then I was just like, oh, it's like you dust yourself off and, like, okay, now I'm ready.
Oh, you mean you got to, like, you got to experience all the freedom that you could experience.
Handle, yeah.
And then you and were then like, okay, like, now I know what this is like.
Well, then that's like, then I knew, like, I want to focus on this, on art.
Right. And
so, yeah. So when I entered grad school, I had just a total different kind of confidence and a focus then.
Wow, you got to, that's very mature. Jesus, you got through that whole, like, experimental period in, like, what, a year or less?
Well, I mean, a lot of things that happened prior to that. But yeah, we were just, like, kind of untethered and, you know.
So then when you got to graduate school, you were able to really, so you, that's what happened. Yeah. Wow. And I was going to say, you know, I want to make sure that that we get to, we only have like 15 minutes left. Can you believe how fast this is going? But I want to make sure we had talked about, like, about, like, coming to New York. I was thinking about that and your relationship with the art world. And I had said to you when we were chatting outside this, you know, before the show started, guys, I was saying that to Beth that, like, for somebody as prolific and, you know, well respected and talented and all that shit, her presence in doing research on her presence was not as robust on the internets as it could be, or if somebody was, like, a lot of artists, most artists who are a lot, would be taking advantage of all the opportunities and accolades and all the stuff, and they would be blowing all that out in self-promotion. And Beth doesn't seem motivated by self-promotion, and most artists are because they feel like they're ambitious in their careers. Mm-hmm. And I know you're ambitious. I mean, There's no question about your ambition or drive or any of that. But I'm just curious to know, like, what your relationship is to self-promotion and the art world and stuff like that. Because I respect that you're focused on the work primarily, but it's not common, and I want to understand it.
And yeah, my first thought was, like, even when I was younger too, was just like, because some of those projects were just so big, it was just everything. You know, my attention was in the making,
right?
You know, figuring it out.
Yeah, right.
And I'm not opposed to self-promotion. Now I'm trying to do a better job of it. But it's like my last Instagram post is still quite a.
We're not evaluating. We're not evaluating. I'm just. I think. You know. I personally think you're a good example because, you know, your energy goes into the work, not into the promotion. And nowadays we know how much promotion counts or it can be relentless. And, you know, you're actually enjoying doing the work and stuff like that. But I just want to know, like, is it just that you're just not interested in self-promotion or
I'm interested. I think that, historically or up until recently, like, to embody that person that you need should be to, like, put it out to the world, like, I get a little insecure, and then so the activity of doing it takes much longer than it should.
So you mean Are you saying like you're shy about putting your work out there? Like that you are you questioning?
What no,
are
I'm
you,
not shy about putting the work out in, there. It's in, just like, say you go to do a post or say in the past with a email or something, or, you know, that I would, you know, set out to start writing that thing. And then it would become very challenging because I would be insecure. And
did you, is that perfectionism or
I mean,
insecure?
I wonder, we're going to circle and make it.
No, so do you what are you concerned about? Are you concerned about like showing off, or that you're not putting it out there correctly?
Yeah, it's not showing off. And it's a weird thing. I mean, if I were to really think about it, I mean, let's say in the context of my work, which is kind of like unraveling the self or something, I think I would be better off if I made, like, if I did a post and have three different voices in it, you know, because it's like how to pare it down to this voice. That
Because your work, maybe your work has so many different levels to it. It's like you don't, it's hard for you to even channel it to one level.
Yeah, I think so.
Do you think that?
Or having one statement or one sentence represent you.
The whole, yeah. Do you think that does growing up in a small town and having all those people evaluating everybody else all the time, does that affect you at all?
I'm sure, totally.
Yeah. I mean, do you ever feel like all these people are thinking this or that?
Yeah, I mean, that's what it's, that was what it was like for sure.
Yeah.
It's interesting because when I first moved here, I was just amazed. I was like, wow, you could choose to be anything you wanted to be. Like, there was just so much. And that, you know, definitely was in the work. You know, the first, my potential future circumstances, that was like New York's gift to me in a way.
Oh, that, you like know? There were all these options.
Yeah. Because so where I'm from, it was pretty limited in that town. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, I'm jumping around a little, but it's worth saying too, when I finished undergrad, my mom was ready to move me back. Mm-hmm.
Oh,
she's
yeah.
She's looking at a box truck. And I was like, what am I going to go back to work at the truck stop? Like, I'm not. I mean, I guess you could say it was very sweet of her or something, but it wasn't like.
Are your parents like, what was their take on you kind of like leaving the fold, so to speak? Did they not understand it? Were they approving, disapproving, or was it hard to like. Didn't just leave the family. You left the whole whole setup.
The kit and caboodle, yeah.
Yeah.
I think because I was the youngest, that was like part of it because I was the last child. But I think it was because it was such an unknown what I was pursuing. And I wondered too if there was a, I don't know if I exactly want to say this. Maybe I'll say it, but I don't know
or
if I mean it.
In
like an intimidation
ways.
Or something, because it was just such a different pursuit. Like, because it's not one thing like, oh, I went to another town and got a job. But it's like I went and pursuing being an artist.
So do you think
which is like a very hard thing to understand
in
most families. And then when I moved to New York, I think my mom just was terrified all the time. Too much TV, too much news and all that, you know.
It made them uncomfortable.
But, and, you know, I had other siblings that had other things happen or whatever. They moved somewhere and come back. Mm-hmm. And I know that when I first had, I mean, I ended up having things happen quite early on because I was in the greater New York. Like, I moved to New York in 98.
And
I was in the 2000 greater New York. And,
And your work was like the hit of that show, absolutely.
Thank you.
Were you surprised by that? I mean, just because it was new, you were here, weren't here very long.
Yeah, it was kind of
a big deal. Yeah,
it was. And looking back, I wish I've mentioned a few times that I would have trouble with anxiety and stuff like that, and I wish I hadn't had as much as I did at the time and could
have
enjoyed it
a
little more.
I should have asked you that earlier.
It's none of your business, but yes.
None of this is any of my
business.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I was going to say, when I ended up in that first show, and then there was tons of press and everything, and then my family was like, hey, look, she's an artist. And like some siblings reached out to me, which they never would have, about my work or anything. And one brother in particular, you know, he was like, yeah, we thought you were just going to be there for a year and come back. I was like, well, I'm so glad everybody had such faith in me. Yeah. You know? Yeah. So it's like I was really doing a thing that.
They didn't understand. I mean, how could they? How could
but,
they?
You know, obviously there's a lot of people here in New York doing a thing, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, that was really far away from their experience. Mm-hmm. So we only have 10 minutes, and I want to make sure we get to, I want to hear you talk a little bit about, like, being a mom. So Beth has, like, you seem from where I sit, like, you have a really nice family. You've been married to the same person forever, right? Mm-hmm. You guys... And you, I mean, it seems like you've created a nice family life.
Yeah.
And so how long have you been married and how old's your son?
Married.
Or with your husband, right. Partner, whatever.
Married in 2005, but started dating, I guess, was it 98 or 99? But Peter was in the first drawing. In fact, it was like, because I started dating him, I moved to New York with a different guy, started dating Peter. And I had, before I broke up with the first guy, I feel like this is so silly because it's like really personal. But before I left the guy I moved to New York with, I said out loud, oh, I should do a drawing about my future, which I thought jokingly is like one of the most like strongest breakup statements because it's not like, our future. It was like, I'm going to do a drawing about my future. But it was like a life thing, you know, this kind of like, what am I doing?
A young person trying to imagine where they're going.
Yeah. And I had done a few text-based works leading up to that, mm-hmm. where the early one was like called Web Drawing of Me, and it explored all the different roles that I thought myself was involved in. You know, it's like mm-hmm. different kinds of yourself. Where am I going with this? Oh,
so you broke up with the first guy and you started dating Peter.
Yeah, and there was other things in that first drawing too. You know, that I worked at Bark Frameworks and played pool. You know, there was other, like a list of variety of things.
Trying to imagine how things were going to go.
Yeah.
Right? When you look back on that, how do you feel about what you were imagining and how your life is at this point? Because that was a while, that was in, would you say 2000s, a while ago.
You know, it's kind of hard to say. I think, you know, how do you say, like the maturity that you get as you get older, like shedding the anxiety, like, I think I have I feel like coming to a new kind of newfound freedom in my work. Mm. I haven't fully, you know, it's opened up, but, you know, I'm still working through it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, there's realities of like you're in a very expensive city.
You are.
Could you just have some more money? Right. You know, things like that. But I think that I like my head now versus excellent. When I was that younger person.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's excellent. So what's motherhood like? Like how does that affect your work and how does that affect your thinking and everything?
Right. I mean, I love it. I learned early on, and I've shared with other people considering having a kid. It's like, you know, no one has to do it, whatever. But it for me, it's like 20% of the world opened up, mm-hmm. like, you know, in terms of new experiences and all that. I think it's been a wonderful way of healing also.
Healing
like
what?
From childhood or past and things. Mm-hmm. Like not stuff I got into too much, but like what? It's like I found that like maybe what I didn't get from my family, I can experience now as a mother,
mm-hmm.
which
mm-hmm.
is awesome.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then, I don't know, like watching a human grow is just, again, totally bizarre.
Totally bizarre.
Yeah. So.
Uh-huh. Does he have artistic tendencies, or how does he? How do you think your art affects him?
I think it's. I mean, every once in a while, I'll make a statement that he thinks it's pretty cool. So that's nice.
Getting approval from a child. Yeah,
I think he's a very interesting problem solver. Like, he's kind of more of a engineering type, but he's really pays attention to how things are made. Likes to take things apart and stuff. So he's, you know, there's a certain kind of more material understanding of the world. And he's actually really good with his hands, which is not anything that you necessarily, I don't think we taught him that.
Right.
But he has a...
His skill. He's got whatever they call that.
Tactile.
Coordination or whatever. He's talented at like making things.
Yeah.
As you and Peter are.
Yeah.
So that would make total sense.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's just been around it. So.
Yeah. And he has, it's genetic too, the skills and stuff like that. So he can kind of relate to what you're doing, maybe? Mm-hmm.
I ask him advice, you know, like, you know, his opinion on things. I guess I wouldn't say advice, but like, I appreciate his opinion.
He is smart. Things to say.
Yeah.
And how did you meet your husband?
Oh, we met in Dennis Oppenheim's kitchen.
Wow.
I guess he initially saw me. I was at an opening at Dennis Oppenheim's at Galapagos in Williamsburg.
Right.
And that Peter was at and seen me there. But maybe we met a few months later. Yeah, it's kind of strange to throw this out, but like when I was in graduate school, Vito Acconci came as a guest artist and ended up, it's kind of like one of the few grad students that actually wanted to talk to him about art. Like it was just like, everyone was talking about, it was whatever.
Career?
No, they were just talking about like
what
food and a dog.
Oh, really?
Like there was a break in the conversation. I was like, could we please talk about art? Like Vito's here. Like. Anyway, but then one of my instructors had to drive him somewhere, and then I kind of got to know him, and he was a little bit of a mentor, and sent me some books and things like that. But because of that, I ended up meeting Dennis a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so then, yeah, so we met.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So it was just like, say, a party. You met him at a party kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you just started dating.
No, it's a little more complicated than that. But yeah,
is it less than a minute complicated?
Well, I'll make it that like because I had my first solo show in New York, which was the two identical rooms, house installation. That was my thesis show in graduate school, and so I was trying to describe what this work was, and to anyone, it was just like, "What do you like?" We weren't convinced, and so I kind of left him pounding my fist on the table, saying, like, at least I make my art. You know, it's like, I'm making a short story.
Right.
And didn't talk for a while. We had an art argument.
Ah, he challenged you.
Yeah.
It was at Roebling Hall, right?
Well, that was my first show with that, which he ended up helping with that installation. But,
So you had an argument. And
yeah.
So you guys, he knew that you had conviction.
Yeah. And what I was saying was accurate.
Accurate. And he had
about the work.
So it started out, I'd say that's pretty good because it sounds like there's a lot of mutual respect there.
Yeah, I guess so.
You know what I mean? He could take, he was going to take, he had to respect you.
Yeah.
You put that out there right away, which is a great message for everyone, especially. Dr. Lisa gives a shit.